All right, let's head to Washington. Congressman Bill Flores joins us this morning. Good morning, Congressman. How are you?
Hey, Scott. Great to be with you on News Talk 1620.
Thank you. Tell me legislatively what we've got planned this week up there.
Well, the big issues are prescription drug overdoses and opioid abuse and addiction, and we've got several pieces of legislation that we'll be voting on this week to deal with those issues. It's not as big an issue in the Brazos Valley as it is in some parts of the country, but there are some states, I mean, particularly pockets in Indiana, that have huge addiction problems because of pain reliever prescriptions, and so we're dealing with those things.
I can remember, I guess, in the presidential debates early on up in New England, they were having a tremendous problem with this as well. How do you attack something that, again, it is widespread across the country, but as you say, in pockets, and if we're talking prescription drug medicine, pain medicine, how do you get a hold of that?
I mean, well, in some cases, you have to have tighter controls, and one of the things we believe is that our state and local communities may have better solutions than the federal government, so we're looking at programs to give the states greater control over some of these issues, because it varies from state to state. And then additionally, one of the things we found in our hearings on this particular issue in the Energy and Commerce Committee that I'm part of is that the federal agencies don't talk to each other. Imagine that. And so we're setting up the infrastructure so that these agencies better communicate about these issues in the future.
Okay. I know you've introduced some bipartisan legislation that is far-reaching, because it talks about it's the renewable fuel standard, and what that basically talks about is how much ethanol goes into the fuels that we use, and so people certainly can see the scope of this, because we're talking corn as this renewable ethanol source. You know, that's in food products, that's in restaurants, that's in grain that's fed to livestock. I can see where the use of corn is very, very important in a whole lot of facets. So tell me about this legislation a little bit.
Well, it's not so much about the use of corn as it is about trying to make our fuel supply fit the market. The RFS was originally a part of the 2005 Energy Act, and then it was amended aggressively in 2007. And in the 2007 amendments, Congress, in its infinite stupidity, put in these hard-coded ethanol volumes that had to be blended into the nation's gasoline supply. And they didn't fit with they didn't put any mechanism in so that it would fit the market based on real gasoline supply. And so as a result, you have this huge push to blend ever-increasing amounts of ethanol in the fuel supply. It's caused our food costs to go up measurably. To the extent that we go above 10% ethanol in our fuel, it's going to cause damage to boat engines, chainsaw engines, small recreational engines, your lawnmower, legacy vehicles that can't run on ethanol above 10%. It is a huge problem. And so we've been working on this for several months. We've got great buy-in across several facets of the United States economy. And then also, I wanted this to be bipartisan. And so here I've got a bill where I'm the Republican lead, and Peter Welch of Vermont, who ideologically is wired a lot different than me, is the Democratic co-lead. But it's a great cross-section of the Congress, and I'm hoping that we'll have it up, queued up for hearings in the Energy and Commerce Committee in the next few weeks, and then on the House floor, hopefully before the end of July, if not certainly before the end of September.
Well, my thought is, though, obviously you're going to get some pushback from corn country.
Well, actually, what we've done is, in a perfect world, now this is me talking, in a perfect world, we'd get rid of the ethanol mandate and let the market decide. If the consumer wants ethanol, they ought to be able to buy ethanol. But this doesn't do this. But what this says is that it can't go above 9.7% of projected actual gasoline supply based on using EI projections. So it doesn't take away the market for our nation's corn farmers. It basically gives them a stable market they can expect. The other thing, too, is after 2022, the EPA owns all of the fuel blends based on the 2007 law. And so there's no predictability for our nation's farmers and the folks that have invested money in the ethanol business about what happens after that. So this provides some stability. It doesn't take the market away. It just says here's what the market will be. And so they can forecast gasoline supply and know exactly what to produce and to plant, just like anybody else in the real world.
Congressman Bill Floor is joining us from D.C. this morning. Just kind of like to get your react. The Obama administration said they will not seek the death penalty for the man who is accused of leading the 2012 attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi. He's pled not guilty to 18 counts of murder and supporting terrorists. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I mean, it's typical with this administration. They're totally out of touch with the American people. The American people, I would expect that the death penalty ought to be on the table for somebody who killed Americans that were serving our country. I'm disappointed. It's just like everything else they do. I mean, this administration says climate change and the science of bathrooms are the most important issues facing this country today, and they totally forget about terrorism and ISIS and all the other issues we have to deal with. It just confirms the American people that they're totally out of touch.
I don't know if you saw the story. Dan Patrick was in Fort Worth yesterday. He's called for the resignation of the Fort Worth ISD superintendent because of the whole bathroom issue. They have a transgender policy now, apparently, in the Fort Worth schools. So it's hitting pretty close to home now, I would think.
It is, and I don't understand it. I've got two granddaughters, and the last thing I want to do is put them at risk to some guy that wants to claim gender confusion or gender ID issues to go in and to assault young women. And I can't wrap my head around this. And I think most folks in the Brazos Valley have a hard time with it.
I think beyond the Brazos Valley, a lot of people have a problem with it.
Oh, absolutely. But it just frustrates the heck out of me. And this whole getting involved in litigation in North Carolina, I mean, these folks are out of control, and I can't wait for January 20th when they're gone.
Well, I hear you struggling for words. I think we're all that way. It's just we're shaking our heads as we talk about this. Let's talk for a moment, turn our attention to the speaker, a front-page interview in the Wall Street Journal today where he's discussing several things. But first of all, I guess he made news by saying that the party is not unified and that he is not ready to endorse Donald Trump. So I'd like to get your thoughts and how you feel about that.
Well, I don't blame him. I mean, Donald Trump has said a lot of things that benefits him, particularly to women and also to minority groups. And I think that that Trump has to walk those back and to apologize for those and talk about how he is going to be reformed in the future on those issues. And in addition, from a policy standpoint, he is very light on policy. Now, let me say this. I will never, ever vote for Hillary Clinton. But I do think that Donald Trump owes the American people an explanation of what the real policies are that he believes in moving forward. I mean, and he's got plenty of time to do it. We in the House are putting together an aggressive agenda for the United States, for the country moving forward. I think that he ought to consider adopting our agenda as his platform. And if he does all those things, I think he's going to find widespread support. But he certainly has to dial down the rhetoric. His immediate action when Paul Ryan was wanting to engage in a dialogue is to throw a punch at Paul, and I think that was totally inappropriate. And I can't wait for the Don to come in tomorrow to talk to many of us and see if we can get this resolved.
Do you understand what the format of that meeting is going to be? Is there something you can tell us about that?
I know some of it, but I don't know enough that I feel comfortable trying to share it right now.
Okay.
I will say this. I'm part of this cross-section leadership council that the speaker put together. There are two Texans on that out of six folks, and I'm hopeful that he'll visit with us. But we'll see.
And I know you want to do a quick shout-out because your Chamber of Commerce folks are up there.
Yeah, we've got both the Bryan College Station and the Waco Chambers in town. I've got a great lineup of speakers for them, a bipartisan group. Including the Speaker of the House, the Majority Leader, our Conference Chair, our Conference Whip. It's a great group. I think our Chamber folks are going to be pleased that they're here. It's going to be a chance for important dialogue between policymakers and folks in the real world.
Well, again, it's an opportunity. You've put together a format that's really neat. They come into the room, and the Chamber of Commerce folks stay there, and it's probably much more efficient than it used to be in years past, so shout out to you for doing that, too. Congressman Bill Flores joins us most every Wednesday. You can hear the entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. As always, we appreciate the time.
You bet. Good talk to you. I'd ask our listeners to continue praying for our country, our military men and women, and our first responders. And speaking of first responders, there's going to be an announcement coming out about the explosion in the West today, and that the news is disappointing on that, and I won't say any more, but be tuned in on that. It's,
right.
it's,
well,
it's, uh, it's interesting.
Okay, thank you for the heads up.